While we're both passionate about intersectionality and being inclusive of all experiences, we have our fair amount of privileges, and we may and probably will mess up now and then. Please don't hesitate to message us with anything. If you notice anything, if we've said something that maybe doesn't quite resonate with you or doesn't feel correct, then just let us know. Also, magic is such a varied and often personal thing, and not everything that we say will work for everyone's practice. So feel free to take what feels right and leave the rest behind. Hi, everyone.
Hello. Welcome to another episode.
Today, we thought we would talk about a few things. Culty things. And
the dangers of capitalism.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, we both watched this documentary series on Netflix called Unwell. And we were really inspired, and we've been talking about it for a while, about talking about sort of the dangers of cult-like behavior within the sort of spiritual and wellness community. So that documentary just really like pushed us to be like, okay, we need to talk about this, because it's so apparent. It's like it's everywhere around us. So
especially in Iceland, there's a few new more recent movements that have sort of picked up a bit of steam here, and already there's been a bit of a negative backlash from some of those. So
and because we've mentioned like in passing so many times, like, oh, those white yoga instructors, oh, those cacao people, so we thought we'd just like really explain properly why we say those things. So if you haven't watched the documentary series, it's really good. We really recommend it. I was really hesitant to watch it for a really long time because I thought that it was going to be like, oh no, we're like science nerds and all of this shit is just made up, you know? But it's actually really good.
Yeah.
It's really, it's very open-minded, but it's also really critical. I think it was really fair as well.
Especially with the essential oils, it was like, okay, there's... Yeah.
There's essential oils is definitely the best episode. Yeah.
And the bee stings.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's an interesting one.
That was an interesting one, definitely. Yeah, so they've got like, what is it, 6 episodes or something? Five or something?
5 or 6.
Yeah. And in each episode, they take on like this thing that is popular within the quote-unquote wellness industry, which overlaps in major ways with the spiritual industry, or spiritual industry, that's horrible, with the spiritual community.
But it is a spiritual industry for quite
definitely.
A lot of people, yeah.
And that's where the problems come from in many ways.
I think the main thing for me, I mean, with ayahuasca and cacao things, it's always been a thing that's sort of not really sat super well with me.
Same.
But after the episode on ayahuasca, I was like, okay, well, yeah, I can see.
Oh, this is why.
Yeah. So that was, it was interesting. Yeah, I think that, well, that's the thing as well, like, ayahuasca is the dangerous end, the end with the more, potentially negative consequences. I know people who have had ayahuasca trips and it's been amazing and life-changing and it's great. And I think if you're doing it in the right way, that's great. But also the people who I know who have had good experiences have been people who have practiced spiritual things for a long time.
It's not something you should just get up and go and experience just for, you know, just for the fun of it, basically. Yeah. And it's become like such a like fashionable thing. And I mean, the tourism industry around ayahuasca in Peru and around the Amazon has had really big consequences, and I'm not going to say that those are entirely negative consequences necessarily. Like, some of it has definitely brought like a lot of money and just really enhanced a lot of things, probably. I haven't really looked into it properly, but I imagine it's not all bad things. But a lot of it is really bad, and a lot of it is, I mean, from that episode, and also I watched another documentary the other day about called The Last Shaman or Shaman, and that's about ayahuasca as well. And it's like, in both of those films, where like when they went there to those towns around the Amazon, there was ayahuasca everywhere, and they were like, "Oh, tourist, oh, white person, come here, get ayahuasca. I will show you. Like, I'll show you a shaman. I'll show you a trip. Like, whatever." And it's become like this.
So sketchy.
It's really sketchy, and like even in The Last Shaman, like this guy has clinical depression and he's tried everything. He's tried electroshock therapy and everything. Yeah, I told you about it. Yeah. So he's had like electroshock therapy, which is usually like the last resort, and like nothing works. He's like, he's really, really depressed. And I think that's, I mean, that's fair. He's also like a very privileged white dude from like, who went to like Yale or some other university like that. Like he's super privileged, really rich, or comes from money anyway. So there's problems with it, but he's going there for the right reason. Like he's actually seeking healing for this thing that is really preventing him from enjoying his life, from living his life.
It's not just like a fun spring break trip.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like, oh, I want to experience something new, you know?
that's, I don't know, one thing that I don't do a lot of drugs, slash any drugs, apart from mushrooms every now and again.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that having only had one mushroom experience, but knowing that I want more, so.
Yeah.
But, and that was an entirely different thing, because then it's the thing of, like, local things as opposed to, like, what you're traveling to other countries to experience. But it seems like a lot of people who I've heard talk about ayahuasca as well in the past have been people who have experience with psychedelics, and they're like, yeah, this is the best trip you can go on, which, like, you know, that's not traditionally, it's not something that people would even take themselves. It's something that the shaman would take.
That's what I didn't know
and go
that
through.
I learned through this series is that traditionally, because this is a like culturally traditional medicine that a shaman or a village healer would take and then sing songs over you to heal you. Like you wouldn't even take the medicine.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing that that's changing, because obviously it has helped a lot of people.
Yeah.
And like the shaman who was talking about it in the film was like sort of neutral about it. He was like, oh, you know, it's changed, but that's okay, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's purely because it's brought a lot of business,
yeah.
You know?
Everyone is only human.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're all trying to survive in this capitalist world. Yeah. Like, that's fine. Do what you gotta do. And it is really hard. Like, there's no clear guidelines on what you should or shouldn't do in these things.
Hmm.
But just, I don't know, treat it with respect is a really important thing. Like, everything that is culturally, spiritually, religiously relevant to a group of people, always treat those things with respect.
Yeah, because it is, I mean, a lot of the ayahuasca experience is really tied to cultural appropriation, because it's, you know, you, the white person, are going there, taking this thing and having these experiences that, you know, would not have ever been afforded to you before they became popular.
Exactly.
You know, like,
and wasn't ever afforded to just the lay person. But it's the sense of it's a sense of entitlement that comes with cultural appropriation. That is like, no, I've come all the way here. I'm not just gonna sit here and listen to you sing over me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna take it myself. Like, I need to experience this. Like, it's so self-centered.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's the whole, I mean, for me, it's this whole thing of why you're not looking to what you have in your own cultural heritage, and the tools that you have available to you that could be good tools for change, you know, not even spiritual things.
Yeah.
I
mean, I'm definitely a proponent of using psychedelics for healing, because, like, we're finally getting studies now on psychedelics as a healing tool, and it's really interesting and important and life-saving. But I think, like, we need to be careful with anything that is culturally relevant to a group of people. And, like, why not use LSD that you can make in a lab? Why not use mushrooms that grow everywhere in the Northern Hemisphere?
Yeah.
Like, mushrooms grow everywhere in Iceland. You can just go and pick them, and then you're working with the spirit of a plant that actually grows here.
Yeah.
Instead of importing this plant that has no... that the spirits around you, like the local spirits, don't know ayahuasca or cacao or any of these things.
Yeah.
they don't know it. It doesn't have any significance here. So you're only getting half the experience, I think.
Definitely. And it's definitely this... It definitely is this thing, like this fad trend type thing that happens in Iceland with everything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Apple products, types of food, like random yeah. like trends of like Buddha bowls for like a month a while ago. And yeah. like, yeah, so everything sort of goes through its thing. Yeah, it just makes so much more sense to go.
If you find yourself like hunting for all of these fads, especially like wellness trends, if you're constantly hunting for a new thing, that means that you're lacking something. Like there is something in you that is saying, "Hey, you need to like." There is something that we need to do, some kind of spiritual connection that we need, and instead of constantly going like, "What's new and exciting?" Maybe just, I don't know, I mean, go to a local medicine worker, like a healing person, someone who works with the local environment, with the local herbs, etc. Sit out in nature and just listen.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I've had my most profound experiences just literally sitting out in nature. Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, I think it's, I mean, I don't know, like there's hope that things will happen in the right way. Like with Tanya, who we interviewed before, her studio space that she's doing healing and stuff with, things like that. Like there are local people who are not doing things in this cacao ayahuasca vibe, which, you know, are really, they're effective. Like they work. It's there's stuff that you can do that is not taking stuff from the other side of the world. And I think ayahuasca, like, as well, because it's such a strong force, for some people need that big push, but other people, it's like, that can be, like, the tipping point between, like, someone breaking and someone
getting better. Especially if you're not working with a shaman who actually knows the herb.
Yeah, exactly.
Meaning a shaman who is actually from the Amazon.
Not a shaman.
Not just, like, a dude from the Netherlands.
Oh, my God. There's a whole thing. Did you see, like, people offering shamanic courses here? Like, pay... Oh, what was it? It was some ridiculous amount of money. Like, 700,000 for a weekend and become a shaman. It's like, no, that's not how it works. You can't pay any sort of amount of money and then become a shaman. Let's not...
That's not how shamanism works. Yeah. You're being duped.
Exactly. Oh my God, it just doesn't sit right with me at all. It makes me feel a bit sick. Exactly.
And with cacao as well, like the other day on Facebook, this post was making around on Facebook. That was this guy who had gone to a few cacao ceremonies and had a really bad experience. And that's not, I mean, you can have a bad experience with truly spiritual things, but what he was what he was describing in that post just sounded like cult-like behavior. It's obviously people who don't have a deep connection with cacao. They had no idea how it worked, even. They were working, and I mean, this is always something that really rings a huge bell for me, like sets up a huge red flag, is that a lot of the people involved were people who were sober and who were going through like 12 steps to recover from addiction, whether it's from alcohol or drugs or whatever, and they were being given not just cacao but other chemicals as well that, you know, they had no information about what was actually in it. Like, cacao is a huge stimulant.
Yeah.
And they were taking cacao before sleep, for example. So, I mean, I can imagine what that would do to someone who has trouble sleeping. Anyone who has been addicted to stimulants before, getting cacao and getting super hyped up and getting, like, that experience that may remind them of what it was like before.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really fucking dangerous.
Yeah. It's so damaging when someone's on like an actual program of recovery.
Yes. That can set you back months. And they had no, like, all of the information they had was like, oh no, it's a natural thing. It's just like chocolate, you know.
Weed is a natural
thing. Yeah, exactly. It's a
complete problem.
Jesus, I mean, opiates are natural. Like, what the fuck? Ayahuasca is natural. They had no information about what was going to happen. They had no information about how often they were going to take it. And they were just told, like, and there were also insinuations of like this one person running the thing who sort of controlled everything and just sounded like a sort of culty leader type, which was, huge red flag, definitely. And that's the vibe I've been getting from so many spiritual people in Iceland. And that's why I've always had a really bad feeling about cacao, because a lot of it just feels really off.
Yeah.
Like there are little signs everywhere. And the thing about all spiritual stuff, all of this, like wellness or spirituality, whatever you want to call it, you always need to be incredibly critical of everything.
Even
and you need
witchcraft.
To think about it. Yeah, witchcraft, everything. You need to be critical and you need to be able to think about things, not just critically, but use your intuition and personalize things so that you can read something like a history of a shaman in Peru, and you can go, wow, okay, how could I localize some of these practices and make them my own? Instead of just taking what that person has been doing in a completely different environment with completely different spirits.
Exactly. That's...
That's the most important thing about witchcraft.
Yeah.
It's just critical thinking.
Yeah, definitely. And make everything your own. Like it's...
Yeah.
And there's one, I mean, within traditional witchcraft, Gemma Gary's writing, which, you know, focuses on Cornwall. It's traditional, like, Cornish traditional witchcraft. And, you know, most of the people who are reading these books are not from Cornwall. But that's fine, because it's pretty... Like her writing, it's pretty easy to... And probably pretty inspiring as well for you to be like, okay, look, I'm going to look at like the folklore of my place and find out like, what's this? I was lucky in Sussex that there's a lot of, I mean, all over the UK, there's a lot of good and well-kept folklore. Sussex has quite a lot that's really readily available, so I was really lucky with that. But reading her books and then being like, okay, wow, I can see how that would work. And I mean, all over the UK, people have been swapping charms and things forever. And even actually a friend of mine is putting together some stuff about folkloric things in the US and tracing things back from where in Europe they came from as well. So it's like, it's very easy to work out stuff. So it's not as if there's no information available.
No, exactly.
All these people who are doing this stuff here, who, you know, I mean, even in Iceland, you learn Norse mythology in school. You have that direct connection to what your ancestors, to what their beliefs were. So
it's not difficult to find folklore in Iceland.
It's
everywhere. It's and that's also like, I feel like a lot of this, I feel like so many spiritual people in the US specifically are very like, at least those who are aware of cultural appropriation and stuff, they become kind of obsessed with finding what their roots are, like where they come from in Europe, and or where they come from, like, and especially for people of color, that's often really difficult because there are no records. And even for Europeans, like if they were escaping Europe for whatever reason, there might not be any historical records, and the family might have like not kept any stories or anything. And in those cases, it's not like you can't connect with spirituality. What you have to do is just make your own thing. You have to like you might have to work a bit harder, but then you just have to take like each herb that grows near you and be like, hey, talk to me.
Yeah.
Like meditate with it. Listen to the spirits, all of that stuff. So you have to make it your own instead of taking it from others.
Yeah. I mean, and there's even the option as well of finding local covens.
Yeah.
Or finding local established traditions.
Yeah.
As like within a witchcraft, more witchcraft current, but like finding established traditions and... If you gel with that, absolutely learn from these people because, you know, there are certain mysteries and deeper things that you can only really get to through learning through traditions. Not everything.
Yeah, and there's a lot of open traditions as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, find whatever...
Lots of Wiccan groups who are happy to welcome new people.
Yeah, and also just like, for example, Ausatru is an open tradition. Yeah. So anyone can join from wherever in the world. So...
Just with Ausatru, be ever mindful of racist undertones in certain groups, especially in the US and
definitely.
Northern Europe. But yeah,
and I mean, Ausatru has been. I always get really annoyed when sort of generically Wiccan source material Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, Freya, oh yes, she is connected to this herb, which only grows in the southern hemisphere. And I'm like, wait, what? Wow. How?
And it's a shame. I mean, all of the knowledge that has been lost through colonialism, we're not going to be able to get back.
And Christianity,
yeah. So there are definitely things where, you know, where someone will have to fill in the blanks by themselves.
Yeah.
But, you know, with enough good, deep spirit work and meditation, those answers can come to you. So it's not completely...
And just be aware as well that it may not be that, like, often it is the same thing as for most other people. But sometimes, like, you might meditate with a herb and it will tell you you can work with it for a specific thing that isn't like anyone ever has written about.
Yeah.
That means that you should not write a book about how this herb can be worked for this specific thing. Yeah, because it's only for you. That's personal stuff.
That's, and I think now in like the age of Instagram as well, it's this whole thing. I share maybe, I don't know, 40% of the stuff that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm going to keep it that way.
A lot of witches who have altars will have like one public altar and one private altar, for example. It's fine to keep some of these things private. You really don't have to share everything. If you want to, that's great.
Yeah.
If you really want to.
But, you know, it's called a mystery tradition for a reason, so...
Yes.
Exactly. And I mean, especially, like, looking to the past as well of how witches, especially in folklore, would keep things private and, you know...
Yeah, there's a reason a lot of these things weren't written down.
I think for everyone, it's just, like, working out where the line is for you.
Mm-hmm.
With everything, really, and that's just good practice for everything in life. But,
But I mean, watch documentary stuff and read up about cults. Yep. Because there is, like, cults are really making a comeback, and especially, that's the thing I wanted to mention as well, is that they're really coming up now because of COVID, because people are so scared, like with essential oils, for example. Mm. There's a lot of multi-level marketing pyramid schemes within essential oils.
Mm.
A few of them have come to Iceland. We're not going to name any names. But a lot of these pyramid schemes and things, they will say that essential oils can cure cancer, which is bullshit. Mm-hmm. There's no essential oil that can cure cancer.
If there was, people would have been using it for a long, long time now. So.
And also, just because one person's cancer got cured while they were using essential oil, you don't know what else they were doing. Exactly. And you don't know really what happened.
Mm.
That's not science, and yes, magic can, magic and science can definitely coexist, and they 100%. Should, in my opinion. But with people, like, because of COVID, like, everybody's feeling frustrated, everybody's feeling scared.
Yeah.
Like, fear is such a natural response to the times that we're living in, to everything that's been happening this year, not just with COVID, but I mean with social uprisings as well. Fear is really natural with so many changes and so many unknowns, and like, how is it going to work out? Am I going to be able to work? Am I going to be able to attend school? Am I going to have to keep my children at home for years to come? Like, you know, all of those things. It's really natural to feel scared, but that is when the cults will come in. Mm-hmm.
Get the
vibe. Whether that cult is saying, like, drink this essential oil and it will cure you.
Drinking essential oils.
Never drink essential oils. I don't care what anybody says.
Peppermint is one that I know is all right.
There's
to
like
go
two
in your
or
body,
three
like,
that you can drink tiny, really diluted.
Clove, like, bits a little bit of clove in your mouth for tooth pain, that's fine.
Yeah.
But
most of, like, if you haven't studied essential oils, never drink essential oils. Regardless of whether someone is telling you to drink essential oils to cure COVID or to never get COVID or whatever, or if it's somebody telling you that if you pray to Jesus 10 times a day, those should be red flags.
100%.
And it doesn't have to be even 10 times a day. Like, it could be like anyone promising you salvation or... promising that anything really can be cured completely and 100% effectively, and especially if you have to spend money to do it. That's not always the case. A lot of the times, though, like, you will be drawn into a cult where you don't have to spend any money at first, and then they'll start.
It's like those games, like online games, like
yeah, well, exactly. Like
apps like
oh, the if you want to get past level 10, then yeah. you're gonna have to pay. Oh, I mean, that's a very cult-like thing. So yeah, please, like, read up on cults, watch documentaries about cults.
Watch Wild like, Wild Country on Netflix. It's yeah, very, very good.
And just learn to see the signs.
Mm. Yeah. Learn, and also, like, learn to it's listen
to the red
like,
flags.
Yeah. It's fascinating learning about all of them and how mm-hmm. they work. Because some of it is so outlandish that it's just like, whoa, like, how would anyone believe this?
Yeah. And then you find out that... Obviously, nobody tells them that
yeah.
when they're starting.
Mm.
It's when they've been sort of, I mean, brainwashing is a strong term, but I mean,
yeah.
I mean, brainwashing is a strong term, but I mean, when you've been in a community where maybe you're not even allowed to have much outside contact with other
yeah.
people, and then,
yeah.
you know, the communal truth becomes the only truth,
yeah.
you know.
And yeah, that's the whole process, isn't it? Of like, first taking away... financial independence, then taking away...
Well, first taking away social independence,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, like, cults will prey on people who are going through tough times.
Yeah.
And that's why this time is such a dangerous one. Mm-hmm. I want to recommend... a musical artist called Serpent With Feet, all in one word.
Wow.
His name is Josiah Wise, and he's also called Serpent, I think. So this is some really, really gorgeous music. It's kind of difficult to describe. Apparently he used to call the music genre pagan gospel.
Okay.
And it's kind of moved away from that label, but that's yeah, it's kind of that kind of makes sense. So Serpent grew up with Christianity within like some sort of mega church, and he really like
okay.
He didn't like it. It wasn't really talking to him, like the faith itself, but he loved gospel music, and a lot of gospel music is very like intense and sort of visceral about your love for Jesus.
Hmm.
And in his songs now, he's often talking about like his very intense and visceral love for a man,
hmm.
Which is kind of similar to that love for Jesus, but I mean, hmm. he is actually talking about men,
yeah.
humans.
yeah, no demigods.
no, exactly. He's got a gorgeous voice. He was trained as a jazz vocalist, and he's got like this really amazing vibrato voice, and the lyrics are so poetic and beautiful and like magical. He uses a lot of terminology from like alchemy and magic and things like that, and it's very sort of visceral in a way.
Hmm.
I just wanted to read like a little bit of his lyrics because they're so beautiful. This is from a song called Redemption. Your name is impossible to know. You're my four ethers. I thought there was redemption in the four ethers. Somehow I thought the sweet perfume of our truths rotting inside your belly could free me. If I could just anoint my body with this perfume, this perfume will surely save me. The thing that sours in your belly will surely save me, surely. But your name is impossible to know.
Nice.
And it's just so beautiful, and then he sings it with that voice of his, and yeah, I really, really cannot recommend Serpent With Feet enough.
Nice. Well, I was going to talk about our friend and general knowledge boy, Sigaboy, who just released an album last month now, yeah. I guess time is sort of relative with our recording. but yeah, it's amazing. He wanted to sort of to give the vibe of being visited by a skald. So like the poet, storyteller. Yeah, like the traveling.
Like a bard.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Bard is, I guess,
the
closest.
Bard, but more spiritual.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. like a spiritual bard. yeah, basically this album was designed to give you the feeling that you've been visited in your home by a skald, and you're being taught taught all of his wisdom. And actually, within like within the album, there's this article that I wrote. Article, lol, as if I'm so high. No, this this post, this blog post that I wrote for Not and Hon. Do you think so?
Yeah.
Okay, nice. yeah, I mentioned that in one of these posts. His song Kyrth, which is essentially the sort of the song that you, well, the process that you would need to go through at the start of any sort of magical working or ceremony, to alert the Landwaiter and the spirits about what you're about to do, and let them know that you're in their place now, in their house, and you want to do something rather than just like butting straight in, which I think is a really good general practice anyway.
Definitely. It's the same thing as when in Wicca you're making a circle.
Mm, yeah.
It's the same thing. You call upon the spirits of the place. Mm, yeah. And you're like, hey, I'm here. I'm going to do some stuff. Mm.
Don't stop my stuff. Help my stuff.
Yeah. Please be helpful. Or if you're not going to be helpful, please leave me be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really beautiful.
It's such a nice album. Obviously, like, I don't understand most of it because it's all in Icelandic. However, it sounds very, very nice.
It does. And the lyrics are really beautiful. In 2020, and continuing a bit into next year as well, the astrology is like super heavy, if I haven't mentioned that before, which I know I have quite a lot. I can't actually remember how much detail I've gotten into, but in this year, the most important stuff, like the most important planets this year, are Jupiter, Saturn, and Pluto, because they've been sort of hanging out all together in Capricorn, and I'm moving into Aquarius now. And these are really slow moving planets because they're really far away, so they take years to go through each sign, and they don't often meet in the same sign as well. So the three of those planets being really, really powerful planets, meeting all in Capricorn and being at the same degree of Capricorn. This happened in the middle of January, on January 12th. Or on January 12th, Saturn was conjunct to Pluto. They were on the same degree. And then a little bit later, on April 5th, Jupiter was conjunct to Pluto. I mean, the effect of those planets has been really felt. And like, I've got notes here that I wrote down at the start of this year, so like early January or like late December or something. And for example, one of the things I wrote down is that the last time that Saturn and Pluto met in Capricorn was in 1518. And in that year, yeah, it's really far away. But in that year, Martin Luther started like religious reformation, overthrowing the church, which ruled like everything. Mm. But we also had medical oddities such as the dancing plague in Europe. And there are connections to different plagues throughout history with these planets, which is really interesting. But the societal sort of change has been the main focus. So the thing is, Saturn is, because Saturn's such a big player, and also because I'm finishing my Saturn return in Capricorn, and Albert is starting his Saturn return in Aquarius. We got it wrong on the last episode.
Yeah.
It's just because Albert has a lot of planets in Capricorn. So, easy mistake to make. But Saturn return is something that people interested in astrology will often talk about as, like, this huge, difficult time, whatever. Mm. It doesn't have to be. But Saturn is very much like, Saturn is also at home in both Capricorn and Aquarius. It rules those signs, both of them traditionally. So it's not necessarily a bad thing, but Saturn is about working hard, and reaping the benefits of them, not necessarily playing hard, but, you know, enjoying the fruits of your labor kind of thing. And it is very much about responsibilities. When you go through Saturn return, which is about around the ages of 28 to 30, is really very much that time of your life when you're sort of forced to grow up in some way. And this is a very universal thing. Like, we attribute it to age, but it can be attributed to Saturn as well. And Saturn is kind of like the taskmaster who sits there and is like, well, have you finished all your homework?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure? Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to go out and play until you finish all your homework.
I like that.
Well, yeah, because Capricorn is very... Yeah, because Capricorn is very much like that as well, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So Saturn meeting with Pluto, because Pluto is also very much about hard work, but more in the spiritual realm. Pluto is about sort of death and rebirth kind of thing. And death and rebirth is not... It's something that all of us go through, spiritually, emotionally, whatever. We all go through those things multiple times throughout our lives. But they're not, I mean, they're not easy, but they are something that, like, there's tremendous reward as well, especially if you sort of, not follow the rules, but as long as you take it seriously, I guess.
Yeah.
And you're not just escaping endlessly. So, like, escapism is something that I think we're all familiar with.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can be good. You know, escapism can be a really good thing for your mental health. A healthy amount. Yeah, exactly. But Saturn is very much about, like, yeah, you get to have your escapism, but you have to finish your tasks first.
Yeah.
And Pluto is kind of like that as well.
I even do that to myself.
I'm yeah.
Like, I have to do my Duolingo before I sit on, like,
yeah, exactly.
Or whatever,
no, I have to do the dishes and then I can reward myself.
Yeah.
Like, and that's a healthy thing. Jupiter being about sort of big expansion can bring really great rewards for anyone who is doing the work. But it can also expand the difficulties. Like, it really, like, Jupiter sort of expands and makes everything bigger that it touches. So, you know, It can bring really great difficulties, but it can also bring really, really great rewards.
Mm-hmm.
So Saturn and Pluto and Jupiter and Pluto conjunctions are sort of happening throughout the year because these planets are also retrograding, which means that they go through the same degrees of Capricorn three times. So that's why they are very much ruling this whole year. Most of it will be in Capricorn. So I've got it written down here. So on January the 12th, Saturn was conjunct Pluto. On April 5th, Jupiter was conjunct Pluto, and that was both of those were at 22 and 24 degrees of Capricorn. Jupiter was again conjunct to Pluto, again on 24th degree of Capricorn on June 30th. The last time Jupiter will be conjunct Pluto, now at 22 degrees of Capricorn, will be on November 12th.
Okay.
And then Jupiter will be conjunct Saturn on December 21st at the winter solstice at 0 degrees of Aquarius. Like, that's when Saturn enters Aquarius and Jupiter as well.
On the solstice?
Yes,
wow.
Right on the solstice. So that should be really powerful. That is also closing that circle because at that time both Jupiter and Saturn have gone direct after retrograding. Which means that that will be sort of the last conjunction between those planets.
Yeah.
And that will sort of close the year in many different ways. And the thing about when these, like, big aspects in astrology happen, they often happen three times because of retrogrades. So it'll happen at, like, 22 degrees of Capricorn, then both of the planets might retrograde, and then, you know, they'll meet again sort of on the way back and on the way forward again.
Yeah.
I hope that makes sense. But yeah, usually these big aspects will happen in threes, and that means that first time it happens, something comes up.
Yeah.
Second time it happens is during a retrograde, and that will be like, remember me, hey, you can't forget about this
second
thing that's happening,
COVID.
Kind of thing. I mean, that's what happened both with COVID and with the Black Lives Matter social movement as well. Like, this was during the summer, the start of summer. So this was the start of the riots and everything happening. And then the third time it happens is like, you better have learned your lesson kind of thing. or else. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't want to scare anyone. I don't think it has to be bad. It doesn't have to be bad at all. But it is a reminder that there is a task that we need to be doing, mm-hmm. and we need to be focusing, and we need to be like putting all our efforts in. And if we don't do it, we won't get any rewards.
Mm-hmm.
We might even get some sort of punishment. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I hate it when like people use astrology to scare people.
Yeah.
And I really don't want to do that because, like I say, it doesn't have to be bad at all.
Yeah.
But you really need to be listening to all of the messages that you're getting.
Yeah.
And one way to do that personally is looking at what is happening at sort of between 20 degrees of Capricorn to about 3 or 4 degrees of Aquarius. So right at the end of Capricorn and very, very early Aquarius.
Mm.
Just see what's happening in your own birth chart there. Because that can really give you a clue about what might happen, and also what Capricorn rules and what those planets are doing in your birth chart, for example.
Okay.
So like for me, for example, I don't really have anything on those exact degrees, but Capricorn rules my 5th house, which makes sense personally. And Aquarius rules my 6th house, so I'm kind of worried.
Yeah. What's 6th house?
5th house is very much about like sort of play and love and pleasure and the things you do for fun and kids and stuff like that. Whereas 6th house is about the jobs that you do, not about like the work or like your career, but like, you know, jobs that you do to make a living.
Mm.
And it's also about fiscal health.
Okay.
So we'll see.
Ooh, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've got Saturn very, very early in Capricorn, so but because it is a slow moving planet, you do want to look at like what I've been doing basically just recently is if you Google Saturn return calculator, you get get a website where you can enter your birth date and you can get all of the important dates for Saturn in your life.
Okay.
Like exactly when they happen. So like my Saturn return was actually in December 2017 to January 2018.
Okay.
However, you want to look at the whole time that Saturn is in your natal sign. And you also want to add a lot of shadow time. So, for example, mine is really early, so I would be looking at, like, a year at least ahead before my actual Saturn return, and then the rest of the time that Saturn has been in Capricorn. So what I've been doing is actually just going through Facebook and Instagram, and right, because the last 5 years have been a bit of a muddle for me personally, so I've been going through Facebook and Instagram and just writing down, like, things that happened. Just been going through my pictures, not all of my posts or anything.
It's such a useful tool to have, like, the dates of everything.
I'm terrible at keeping a journal, so I'm really thankful for Instagram and Facebook. And that also reminds me of, like, smaller things that I might not have posted about, but I was like, oh, that happened around that time when I posted this, you know.
Yes.
So I've just been, like, making a list and looking at what's been happening and figuring out, like, you know, there's going to be a lot of different lessons, and there might be an overarching theme, depending on which house your Saturn is in. So look at the house, look at what that house means, and then look at like what has been happening through those years.
Mm.
Is really helpful. And if you're really worried, if you've got Saturn in Capricorn especially, and you're worried that you haven't been listening, you can do what's called remediation,
mm-hmm.
which is actually just like doing stuff that pleases Saturn.
Okay.
Because you've got a little bit of time. Like Saturn enters Aquarius, oh yeah, just before the solstice, so in December. So you've got a little bit of time yet. Really look at, like I said, like do something like that. Make a list of what's been happening and try to find out what kind of lessons the universe has been giving you.
Yeah.
And find out where you've not been listening or where you've been slacking off or trying to escape like a difficult lesson or something like that. Try to do some work on it and maybe even try to do some symbolic work on it.
Yeah.
wear a lot of black clothes, for example.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's me.
Read the Orphic hymns to Saturn, read poetry dedicated to Saturn, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Light a candle for Saturn.
Appease him.
Yeah. Make a to-do list.
Yeah. Oh my God, I love lists so much. Oh.
Exactly. Make a list and, like, really tick them off. Yeah. You know, that's something that could be used to remediate for a Saturn return.
I feel I'm sort of lucky because I'm pretty... Yeah.
Pretty Saturnine in my behaviours. If you've got a good
Saturn in your chart, then it's not going to be that hard because it will just come naturally to you.
Yeah. So we were going to do our crystal of the month. Oh, I keep saying month, but it's like, well, our crystal of this allotted period of time.
Crystal of the episode.
Yes, that makes a lot more a lot more sense. So my crystal for this episode is jasper. And there's so many different colours and forms.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, jasper is known as the supreme nurturer. It's the different colours are used in lots of different healings.
Mm.
And I think it's even... Well, I think it's more like the specific colours are used for healing specific body parts and specific ailments and things. But yeah, it's a great supporter through times of stress. So it's a great COVID-19 crystal to have.
Yes.
Because, obviously everyone's a little bit stressed right now. So
exactly.
It also encourages self-honesty, which I think is another great, like, quarantine COVID-19 crystal to have, because if you're not looking inwards during this time, not that you have to be doing anything during this time at all.
No, exactly. Yeah.
But, you know, you've got a chunk of time now to dig a little bit deeper in yourself. Maybe that's a good idea.
Or spending a lot more time with ourselves.
Yeah.
So,
and with families and loved ones, which brings up a lot of
stress. Very stressful, especially if you're not being honest or if someone is not being honest.
Exactly. It also aids in quick thinking and organisation, which I love because I like to be a very organised Capricorn, which you wouldn't think with the way that I know. Like, I have everything written down in lists, but then I'm like, I get to it and I'm like, and English just goes out my brain. And it is my only language. Jasper is also a good supporter of long-term illnesses. It re-energizes the body and it helps with the long haul healing.
Mm.
So having one while you're going through any sort of prolonged period of any mental, physical, any sort of upset, it would be a really good stone to have with you to heal you through those times. I know that yellow jasper particularly is used for confidence. And I mean, when I was, how old, maybe like 15, I gave a friend of mine, I had like a little ball of yellow jasper, and I gave it to her when she'd gone clubbing, because she wanted to feel confident and sexy,
Nice.
And I was like, yeah, take this crystal. It's like, to 14, 15, and this was like a kids club event, it wasn't like, we weren't sneaking into like
it's 18 quite young.
Plus things, but she was like, yeah, I want to feel good, like, so yeah, sweet, take this crystal, it'll be great. So, I mean, and that's a crystal that I've used as well for similar things. I feel like I graduated to carnelian after a while when I became of legal age. But
when you have the self-confidence, because carnelian is so intense sometimes.
I mean, I love it.
Yeah.
But it's like, also just green jasper is really good for any work with the heart chakra. So any healing, any lovey-lovey self-care moments. So to have that by a bath while you're having a bath. I mean, in the bath too. I think, jasper's fine in water, I'm pretty sure.
I can't remember, but
we'll double check and make a note of it afterwards, and I'm pretty sure jasper's okay in water. Because I've done it before and I don't have any... I haven't had any complaints, but that's my stone for this month. Jasper is very good. All the different colours can help with loads of different things, but in general it is just a really good healer, so a very good stress time crystal to have with you.
Nice.
My crystal for this episode is bronzite, and I think it's really beautiful. It looks a lot like gold leaf that people use for painting with, sort of like these specks of bronze, gold, in various hues. It's very beautiful. It can give you a boost to your courage, and especially for your courage to stand up for yourself. It's connected with Leo, so it gives you that sort of lionic energy and bravery, which is beautiful. But it's also, it's not like too intense or aggressive or anything. It's also called the Stone of Courtesy, and it promotes love, equality, protection, and even politeness in you and everyone around you.
Very
so
British,
it's very like very British. Maybe don't use it in England. But if you're feeling like, especially if you're feeling very vulnerable, or you think, or you feel like people might get sort of too aggressive around you or anything, and you're feeling just like particularly vulnerable to that, you can wear that, and it can help promote sort of just polite discourse and courtesy.
Yes.
It can also help you focus on what's important to you instead of what's important to others. So that's also, like I was talking about with the book, it's the values, like what's important to you. Stop focusing on what others think should be important to you. So it can help you focus on that and find out really what it is that you really want. It keeps you grounded and calm and focused. It reduces stress and anxiety, and it repels negative energy and just like sends it back to where it came from, which can be really good. And sometimes you don't want that. Maybe sometimes you might want some different crystals that sort of dissipate the negative energy instead of sending it back. So I would say it depends on the circumstances. And it can help to make you more socially active, which maybe you might not want right now.
Yeah, that's depending on where you are in the world. It might not be a good idea.
Exactly. Unless you're a massive introvert like me, because I feel like I've been socializing more than usual.
Yeah, like even through like screens.
Yeah,
it's like, I'm
exactly.
So used to meeting loads of people in person and seeing them. Like,
exactly. Wow. It can get really heavy sometimes. Mm. So yeah. And with bronzite, it's recommended that you clean it very regularly, preferably after every use or once a week. And you can just sort of meditate with it and cleanse it.
Nice.
With meditation.
Could work nicely with as a ward in general.
Yeah.
If you were to enchant it maybe in that way.
Exactly.
Bring
yeah.
That repulsion of
yeah, exactly.
Becky things. If you want.
Especially
to,
if you think people are sending
way.
You bad energy or anything.
Mm.
And I actually wrote down two different pairings with bronzite that I found. If you pair it with either rose quartz or rhodonite, or both, it can be really helpful to remove traumatic and emotional scars when opening or unlocking the heart.
Nice.
Which sounds just, I love that description. And you can pair it with, oh god, I can't read my handwriting. Phenacite, Danbarite?
I think that's a thing, yeah.
Yeah. Angelite or
Sugalite.
Sugalite.
Oh, I know this one from Steven Universe. Nicki Minaj was the
oh,
voice actor
nice.
For
Sugalite. Okay.
I think so anyway,
yeah. Or with black carronite. So all of those are crystals that I'm not super familiar with, to be honest. But you can pair with any one of those to bring high frequency energy back down to earth.
Nice.
So if you're feeling very like high strung or anxious or sort of up in the clouds, and you really need that intense grounding. We really hope you enjoyed listening and got something out of this episode. We really loved making it, as usual.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to Nordnagal for letting us use their song, Jag. And you can check them out through the links in the description. They're on Facebook and on SoundCloud. Thanks as well to Beau French for designing our logo. You can
mm-hmm.
check out his art on Instagram at beau.jf. And please remember to subscribe to the show if you haven't yet, and give us a rating where that's a feature. That's super helpful, and we'd really appreciate it so much. And we'll include links to all of our socials and to our email as well in the episode description, and names of books and little bits and bobs. Have a magical day.
Yes.